Have you been to a Montana Shakespeare in the Park play? How can you not if you haven't been? I don't mean to, like, you know, dress you down here, but they've been going on, like, this is their 54th season. Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. They're doing, like, 64 communities and I think it's 4 states, maybe even more. I bet they're tempted to, well, because it's so fun, right? Yes, we're talking about Montana Shakespeare in the Parks today. The plays this year and how they're relative to us, but also all the hard work that they do. And you're fun, right? You grab your picnic basket, you grab your lawn chair, and you head over, like tonight. You're going to head over to the nursing home lawn in Ekalaka, Montana. Enjoy The Merchant of Venice. It starts at 6:30 tonight. Who's behind that? Sam Cheeseman is with us here from Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. And Kevin Asplund. They got a grueling schedule. Made time for us here today. Let's have some fun on Voices. I know the work that goes in behind it, but there's a lot of fun, too, I think. And then what do we see? We see Shakespeare in the Parks. This is free admission. And it's the kind of thing that I don't think we normally, you know, get ourselves in front of. We're not accustomed to theater, especially in the parks. But I think for summertime, I don't know that we don't look at where's Shakespeare in the Parks this year. How can I catch one of these shows? Free admission. You set up your lawn chair. You have your family on blankets or whatever it is. It really is a ton of fun. But there's so much work that goes behind it when you look at all these communities, and they do a great job. So the costumes and the staging and all of that, they're doing all that work themselves. Like I said, July, there's all but 4 days they are performing. So it's Ekalaka tonight, Baker tomorrow at the Roger Schmidt Amphitheater, Riverside Park in Miles City on the 3rd. They'll take the 4th off for Saturday, but Sunday they're in Forsyth. And then Colstrip, and then Hardin, then Billings, and then it's Red Lodge. This could go on. Let's welcome our guests here and talk more about Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. Welcome back, Kevin Asplund. He's the executive artistic director, has acted in these plays over time as well, has directed, and joins us today to talk about this along with Sam Cheeseman, who's an actor in a couple of the plays here. In fact, in one play, he's playing 2 different people, but he's also the tour manager, so he's got a lot more on his mind. First, Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks so much for having us this morning.
Gosh, thanks for coming alongside. Sam Cheeseman. Sam, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having us. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is fun. Let's start, Kevin, wherever you want to start, right? I look at the grueling schedule. I look at all the actors. I want to hear about it all. But let's go back, 1973. So for 54 seasons, you guys are a part of our summers. You can't run from us now.
Well, yeah. I mean, 1973, Bruce Jacobson, who was the original artistic director, as faculty member at MSU, he had this idea to take Shakespeare out to rural communities because his grandmother was from Burney, Montana, and so he had a lot of familiarity with how people really appreciate the cultural arts and good literature, and so he made that happen with 5 towns. In the first year, the next year grew to 15 towns, the following year was 25 towns, and now we're in 64 communities across 5 different states. You know, it's really, really, really important to note within this conversation that we're in direct service of the communities of Montana and beyond. I mean, the communities and the people of Montana really own this organization. And it's because of them and their families over the last 54 years that we're still here today and thriving, particularly in an industry that, you know, I think across the country is suffering a little bit. But out here, the people of Montana feel that it's incredibly important to their daily lives, and so they keep us going.
I love that. And you got a lot of sponsorships, and so you could keep the admission free. I mean, that's a key part of this, too.
Yeah, that's the most important part, you know, is making sure that everybody has access to it. And as a result, you know, what's really cool, Tom, is that the amount of young people that come out to enjoy the productions, oftentimes I feel like it's the young people that are bringing the parents out. They have a lot of familiarity. I mean, Sam has been a huge part of our elementary school program during the winter and spring. And, you know, we're getting to kids K through six really early, and then the high school program in the fall. And so this helps to keep the generations of interest within the theater going. And so, yeah, it's an honor to serve everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's important, too, that you're getting into schools like that. And it is unusual for them. You know, we're so removed from the time of Shakespeare that these plays are novelties almost. Sam Cheeseman also with us as an actor, but also as a tour manager, and that's for both of these plays, The Merchant of Venice and Much Ado About Nothing. We'll talk about them a little bit here and why they were chosen this year and their relativity to today's world. But Sam Cheeseman, good morning, sir. Tell us about yourself, and then tell us about what it's like getting out on the road in Montana.
Definitely. You know, I got involved with this company about 6 years ago now. Back in 2020 was my first time touring out here. And I now split my time pretty evenly throughout the year with Chicago and Montana. And I refer to it as my artistic home and my creative home, and made the best friends of my life out here. And I've had a blast doing it over the last 6 years. So it's a great time. And when we're on the road, like you mentioned, it can be grueling at times, but it's a lot of fun too when you're outside in Montana all day. And even if you're building the set, working, doing it all for a while before a day off, it's really hard to be in a bad mood. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can see that too. Tell me the price you pay, because you guys, rain or shine or snow or wind, I don't have you ever canceled a performance?
You know, it's happened occasionally.
I bet, yeah.
When something really, really comes out of nowhere mid-show, but typically every place we go to has a backup indoor location as well. But I always say if the weather wasn't a factor, you could already count at least 10 more tours that I would take on, because it is one of the most challenging parts of the job is trying to predict at the beginning of the day when you have to make that call what it's going to look like in the evening. But we'll definitely power through some rain. We'll hold the show for a few minutes if it gets too heavy and kind of let it pass or feel it out. But, you know, 99% of the time we're doing a play.
I know. And I love that too. And Kevin, I think Montanans love that too, right? You guys are doing this outside, and it's no less than what the original Shakespeare actors went through. I mean, they had a lot of challenges as well in growing theaters back then.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's, you know, people believe that Shakespeare early on in his life was introduced to traveling troops of actors that would travel across the English landscape, performing shows in different communities. And, you know, back then, of course, it was working, performing Greeks and a number of other playwrights at that time. And so he would have been introduced to outdoor theater at a really young age, and then that carries into his time in London, where, you know, the Globe Theater, well, I don't want to go into a whole dramaturgical presentation, but there are a number of theaters in London that he was working for that were all had open canopies. And so it's interesting, in some of his plays you can hear language that refers to the elements, you know, whether it's the sky, the moon, the sun, wind, storms. And so he's reflecting and talking really in real time about what's happening in the elements amidst performance. And so, you know, in Montana, any opportunity we had to be outside, particularly in the summer, is, you know, something that we really grab hold of. And so to be able to do these shows in local parks, essentially in the backyards of our community members, is a really special experience. But like Sam said, you know, I believe they had some pretty heavy winds last night in Maquoshetco State Park. But we're always making sure that we have a way to go indoors when the weather is challenging for us.
And that probably adds to the logistics behind it. Let's talk about that a little bit. And Sam, as a tour manager, I suppose, I mean, you're also acting in both of these plays too. But I would assume that being a tour manager with all those logistics really takes a lot of your time. Talk about that job. Talk about how volunteers come alongside to help you in that. Talk about having to prepare for the kind of weather. And you know, not every community is prepared for that, but you find a way, don't you?
Yeah. We have a really great connection with the National Weather Service. I've probably talked to them more than most people. So I call them throughout the day. We have a 3-hour set build, you know, where we're building a 2-story set every day. So if we build that set outside, we're doing the play outside. And we build that set inside, we're doing the play inside. So we try to make that call, 6 or 7 hours before the show. So that's when we're trying to get the best read on what it will look like. But, you can liken my job to being a project site manager at times. And the delegating is great. And we have an amazing group of actors. We always want to make sure we have a handful of alumni that have done the tour before on each season, as well as a handful of new folks, because you need the alumni to be able to pass down that information and pass down the knowledge of what it is to be out in the parks and to be building the set. And we're setting up, 10 microphones and 6 speakers in each town. And there has to be people that can do that. And we're packing a trailer safely that's going to be driving on a lot of these rural roads, and it has to be safe to do that. So my job is more of the oversight of all of that and having the experience to be able to oversee it. But yeah.
And what I appreciate about all this as well is that, and Kevin, and maybe Sam, you can address it too, but Kevin, these are world-class performances. You guys, you're not just saying, oh, we're just going to set up and, well, we'll do whatever we can do. You are bringing art to rural Montana in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and something that we really take a lot of pride in is that, throughout the course of the year, I'll travel the country to audition actors, to find actors from Chicago, and I go down to Houston as well, and a number of other MFA programs across the country. These actors are working professionals, in their respective cities, and they are able to come out here and to share their immense talents with our communities through building these shows. But also, it's really important to note that, we have about 13 to 14 people that come out to build all of our costumes. So The Merchant of Venice and Much Ado About Nothing, everything you see on stage is built by a team of people, drapers, firsthand, stitchers, designers, shop managers, and then also scenery, too. It's like we have 2 different set designers, a team of carpenters that maintain the stage and then design sets for us. We get props. We get amazing, incredible sound designers. Because as you know, Tom, particularly being in the radio industry, is that sound is so incredibly important for 21st century ears.
Yeah.
And so we're really investigating a lot of energy into how we create the right kind of sound landscape. People will see Much Ado About Nothing. It's a bit of a tribute to the 250th anniversary of the U.S. And so you'll hear music that's reflective of that. Whereas in The Merchant of Venice, it's set more in the late 1930s, and so it has that kind of that 1920s, 30s musical vibe to it. So that's really important as well. But world-class indeed. I mean, it's 54 years, and the way in which the communities support us makes it possible for us to build the best possible product that we can for our folks.
Yeah, in their 54th season here, Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. And I hope you have caught one of the plays here or there, maybe in your hometown, or maybe you had to travel a little bit. There's a lot of locations. And this is what I love about it, is that they're setting up in, last night. It was Much Ado About Nothing in Glendive at Makoshka State Park at the Hyatt Amphitheater, a place where I've said that I got married there. So it's cool that there you can relate to this program right there in your town. Ikalaka tonight, The Merchant of Venice at 6:30 at the Nursing Home Lawn, right? Roger Schmidt Amphitheater in Baker, Much Ado About Nothing tomorrow, okay, July 2nd. I'm going to give a little quick bit here. Miles City's on the 3rd. That's the Merchant of Venice, Riverside Park. Then you go to Forsyth. You'll take the 4th off. Rosebud County Courthouse, East Lawn, and then Colstrip on the 6th. Harden on the 7th. Then later, you just got to go to Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. It is simply shakespeareintheparks.org and get a look at that schedule because they're coming to a place near you. Our guest today, Kevin Aslan, he is the executive artistic director and also Sam Cheeseman, an actor and in the two current productions and also tour manager. Hey, Kevin, thanks a lot for coming on here. Appreciate that. So why does Shakespeare still matter? Let's talk about these two plays and why you chose them this year.
Fantastic question, man. So Shakespeare matters because the themes that he was writing about, you know, namely he's the master of the human condition and the way in which we psychologically engage with one another or reflect upon issues that are relative to our immediate communities or the world in which we're in. And so those themes have carried on throughout over 400 years now. And so with the two plays that we chose this year, The Merchant of Venice really gives us, I think we all believe, those of us who built the show, that it's an incredibly well-balanced play, which makes it accessible for all ages. And the playwright's so amazing with that, you know, and historically he was writing these plays so that, you know, at the Globe Theater, you had the royalty at the top. You had sort of the middle class in the middle, and then you had the lower class, or what he calls the groundlings, on the lower level. And so he's playing for all three socioeconomic groups, political groups, and The Merchant of Venice really gives us that in a really fun way, but also in a very thoughtful way. So there's tons of comedy throughout the show. Great music, as we were talking about. But it does carry a pretty serious message that I think it's important for us to reflect upon in today's world. And so Shakespeare introduces the idea of faith, and whether that's more with religious overtone or a societal overtone, he's talking about the importance of acceptance and the importance of mercy. So the word mercy appears over 28 times in the play. And oftentimes Shakespeare will do that where he has a word that reappears throughout the course of the play. And this one happens to be mercy. And I think the opportunity that we all have with hearing this play and seeing it is to how we can reflect upon ourselves in the way in which we offer grace and mercy to those who might be different than us, you know. And, you know, we're in a world where we're talking a lot about whether it's divisiveness or socioeconomic difference, geographical difference. But so how can we be introduced to ideas and themes that are not necessarily within our own individual worlds so that we can learn how to accept through mercy? And so with great comedy, music, and then leaving us with a really good message that I think is really important for us to all think about. And Much Ado About Nothing is, you know, the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Like, Much Ado About Nothing is that. You know, it's about relationships. It's about the challenges that men and women will have with each other within relationships. This idea of assumption and how we can get carried away with making assumptions that perhaps are not true. And then that can lead into betrayal. And so how do we navigate betrayal and forgiveness, ultimately acceptance? But Shakespeare does it in a way in which it's such a lighthearted comedy around these, there are numerous love stories. Sam plays the quote-unquote villain in the play who sort of sets some of the... I guess, the darker plots in play. But it's relative because, you know, we see ourselves reflected on stage via the relationships that we have with our partners, relationships that we witness within our families and communities, and the playfulness of how those relationships play out.
Nice. I appreciate that. Sam Cheeseman, I want you to weigh in on these two plays as well. From an actor standpoint, but also from a theater fan standpoint. And then, you know, your job as a tour manager. You said in Merchant, Graziano, you get to, and it's not Don Juan in Much Ado About Nothing. It's Don John.
Don John.
Yeah. Go, Sam. Tell us about these two plays.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. You know, it's a very unique experience as an actor being in the play and being along for those rides. The ride that Kevin, you know, just explains so beautifully. Like when I think about Merchant of Venice, I think I feel differently at the end of the play every time we do it because that play, like Kevin said, like mercy is the main topic that's brought up throughout, and it all culminates in a pretty big. Classic courtroom drama scene towards the end, and you get that sense of a lot of people talking and not a lot of people listening to each other, which I think a lot of people can relate to and have been in those situations. And how that resolves itself feels a little bit different every day, and I think that's because we're in a different place every day, we're in a different town every day, we have a different audience every day, and I think it's important to remember with both of these plays that plays are meant to be experienced live. You're supposed to be there. It's supposed to be heard. It's supposed to be an audience in a room or in a park with you. And with Shakespeare in particular, the audience is a character in the scene.
Like, yeah.
We talk to you. You know, we are looking at the audience members. And this season especially, we have times in both plays where the audience is either on stage with us at times or we're directly in the audience talking to people. In both plays, it feels like more than the last few seasons. So we've had stories at the end of every day about how the audience affects the scene and the audience affects the story and the plays and how it ends. You know, Graziano in Merchant of Venice is a fun guy. He's party guy. He's funny. He likes to talk a lot. And then by the end of the play, I think you see some of the darker sides of him, and he becomes kind of that person that we've all met. Those people, we're like, oh, that guy's a good time, that guy's a really, really fun person, and then you're like, oh, but there's some nastiness there too, and what does that mean when I laughed at all his jokes earlier in the play. And then Don John in Much Ado About Nothing, we've gone in a pretty fun direction with as well, because he doesn't have a lot of stage time, he doesn't have a lot of lines, so there's a lot of room for interpretation. It's believed at the beginning of the play, it's mentioned that he has kind of been, what's the right word for it? Disarmed and restricted by his brother. He's done something he wasn't supposed to do. He's tried to overthrow the efforts of the army in some capacities, but he doesn't believe that he did anything wrong. So we get to play with that and think, well, while he's trying to get revenge on them throughout the play, you know, what had happened before? How much was he hurt? How much was he wronged? As you unravel kind of the mischief that he gets to unravel throughout the play.
54th season, right, for Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. And as I've said here, I hope you have taken in one of these or more of them. A lot of people make it just a regular tradition. It's free admission. And so bring your lawn chairs, your picnic baskets, and be prepared, you know, to make it to the Fishtail Family Park. That's on the 10th of July. If you're nearby Powell, Wyoming, it's Washington Park. Chico, on the main Chico Main Lawn. I think you could just set up about anywhere in Chico, and they'll find you. Sam Cheeseman is with us here, an actor and also tour manager for Montana Shakespeare in the Parks. And Kevin Aslan is with us too, executive artistic director. Find out more at shakespeareintheparks.org. That schedule, like I said, is grueling. We'll talk about that a little bit. They're living out of suitcases and trailers. July, only 4 days off. August, only 4 days off. It's a full schedule. So do check that out. I'll post it up here myself. And kind of keep it handy and remind you folks when those plays are around the state. So, hey, Kevin, I want to ask that question as you know, we're talking about. And thank you for giving those explanations about the plays and how they're relative to us. And do you guys have to take any kind of liberty to make them relative? Shakespeare, he is probably one of the world's best wordsmiths, but he he probably, restrained himself because he was a very much an everyman playwright. He was speaking to the audience and to everybody else, and at times speaking to royalty and speaking to government as well. So do you guys adjust that language-wise, or what do you do to make them understandable for us here in the 22nd century?
Oh, man, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right. I mean, Shakespeare was writing for numerous members of his immediate community. Like you said, he was writing plays for the Queen as much as he was writing plays for the common people of London and beyond. And so that's why we really believe that he is one of the most well-balanced playwrights of all time. Particularly in the way in which he talks about the human condition and as it relates to every different social group. And so, as we were talking about earlier, we're always trying to make sure that we're not producing these plays as museum pieces. Again, meaning that we're not checking out, not come to see shows that people are wearing pumpkin pants or tights, but rather... there is something visually relevant for audience members to grab hold of, and that might be a different time period. Like we were saying, Much Ado But Nothing is set in the Revolutionary War era, and Merchant is set in the 1930s. So we don't change language. I do give actors sort of a long leash to incorporate moments of improvised language throughout that might be common. In Merchant of Venice in particular, there's a bit of an audience participation moment, and the actor playing Lancelot does an amazing job of improvising within the context of Shakespeare's language and that character. And I just believe that that's super playful and fun for audiences. And honestly, if Shakespeare were alive today, I firmly believe that he would be doing the same thing, because he was a writer for the times. You know, he understood what was happening within his immediate environment. And so I really believe he'd be doing the same thing today.
Very cool. You know what? I'm going to take the comment here from one of our listeners. Frank is calling from Evergreen. And Frank, and thanks for calling, Frank. You're on Voices of Montana here. It's Kevin Aslin and Sam Cheeseman. I think you wanted to comment kind of about what Kevin was talking about here.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. You bet.
Thank you. Yes. He was considered the father of a Western theater. But in the earlier days of the Elizabethan and the Jacobean period of time, when he's doing these plays, all the actors were male. I mean, all the women roles were done by men, and or young boys, or just voices just starting to crack, young teenagers. But is that the type of we wouldn't want to suppose it. That's the way you do your theater.
Let's ask that question. And thanks, Frank. I appreciate that. So Kevin, those are some considerations, and Sam, you as well. Keeping it, I guess, everything nowadays seems to be political, right? It doesn't matter what it is you're doing. You're having a bowl of chicken soup, and then all of a sudden you have to consider the origin of that chicken soup to really enjoy it, or maybe you should feel guilty about it. I don't know. I'm making some stuff up. But and Shakespeare was political, and he was confrontational about things, but he hid behind a theater to do that. What's that consideration, Kevin?
Well, that's a great question. Frank, thanks for calling in. It seems like you have a good handle on Shakespeare and the world in which he was writing. Frank's totally correct that, these plays were originally produced by a company of men. And in that period, women were not, they were prohibited from being on stage. It's interesting, some of Shakespeare's contemporaries, there's a play called The Roaring Girl, in particular by Ben Jonson, and that does introduce a very powerful woman of that period. But I digress a little bit. But he was reflecting upon what was allowed in that period. And, of course, today we want to make sure that the folks that we have on stage represent the folks that we see every day in our communities. And so the role of women, not only within the scope of the plays that we're producing, but also how they work with Sam and his leadership in building the stage and taking a huge role in ensuring that we're bringing these shows to communities in the best way, they're playing an integral role in ensuring our success. And so to ensure that we are mindful of how we are representing the entirety of our society, whether it's with diverse actors, women, men, it's important for us to make sure that everybody in the audience can see themselves reflected on stage.
Yeah. Sam, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think Shakespeare, if he was allowed to, would have had women in his plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's like what Kevin said, women were prohibited. But Shakespeare wrote about the human condition and wrote about relationship and wrote about gender and wrote about politics and wrote about people. So I think he would have loved to have been able to have women in his plays at his time. So I just think he wrote for everybody.
What are some of the things that you take, Kevin? I mean, pardon me, let's stay with Sam, as feedback. All right. You and I'm surprised to hear that you can put that stage up in 3 hours and then you're tearing it down after dark. I'm not sure how long that takes. And then you're repeating it tomorrow. And there are people who are mulling around and they want to talk and they want to give some feedback. Sam, what do you enjoy when people come up and say, hey, thank you for this? What do you like?
Yeah. It's kind of two sides of the same coin, which is awesome because on one hand you get people coming up like, this is amazing. Thank you so much. I can't believe you all are here. This is world class. I can't believe it's free. And like that's always impactful and that's always special. And you get into conversations about the play. And then on the other side of the coin, we take a lot of pride in that this is normal for folks out here to come see Shakespeare in the parks. And when you're in the schools, it's normal for kids to be like, oh, it's Shakespeare Day. Hope the Shakespeare people are here. And it's a beautiful thing to be like, wow, this is so normal here. And, you know, I live in Chicago half the year, and this, we wouldn't get an audience like this out in the park, and we wouldn't have this appreciation that's just understood here.
Thank you.
So, I mean, that.
Kevin, what's been...
Definitely.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, I mean, that really, to Sam's point there, really speaks to the values that we as Montanans have. The value that we place on community, the value that we place on our families and our work lives. I mean, there's a great work ethic within Montana and a really powerful system of values that we all maintain within our communities. And you were saying earlier that, you know, Shakespeare, as part of our program, Shakespeare is simply the vehicle by which we bring people together. And within the scope of the cultural arts and performance, you know, all the, like you were saying, everything is political right down to chicken soup. You know, all that goes away. You know, for a moment in the day, all of that divisiveness, all of those conflicts, however you want to think about it, it goes away. And we are, as a community, regardless of our belief systems, politically, socioeconomically, geographically, that all goes away when we have the opportunity to share in this experience together. And I think that at the core, that's what Shakespeare in the Parks is, and that's what is most meaningful to our communities.
Wow, thank you for that. You know, and I know of a theater film called The Willing Suspension of Disbelief. The audience is to come and suspend their suspicions of disbelief about things to go ahead and take in the scene. And as I go to break here, I'm just thinking that might be something that we need nowadays too, and in other areas, a willing suspension of disbelief so that we can work together on a lot of things. And I do appreciate theater for being exemplary. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte on the program for tomorrow. And then on Friday, we are observing our holiday, and we'll play a best of. I say that in complete humility. We had a conversation with Rob Nadelson, who's a constitutional scholar, wrote a series, a six-part series on the Declaration of Independence, the men behind it, the value of it, how it changed the world in a lot of ways. So we'll have that on Friday's program. And again, Governor Greg Gianforte tomorrow. Welcome back here. Tom Schultz alongside Kevin Aslin is with us here from Montana Shakespeare in the Parks, Executive Artistic Director. Find out more. Again, that schedule, it's just hot. And it's all over the place. It really, they're going to Bernie, for crying out loud. So go to the website and pick that up, shakespeareintheparks.org. Sam Cheeseman is also with us here, too, as the tour manager and an actor in the play. Hey, Kevin, I want to get on a little bit here about this. We think it's, you know, summer program, but you guys are in the schools. You guys have winter programs. Talk about the accessibility of Shakespeare in the Parks for Montana communities.
I appreciate that, Tom. Yeah, you know, we're on the road over 200 days out of the course of the year, and a big bulk of that is with the education programs. And so in the fall, we have a high school program that goes out to over 50 high schools and middle schools. And in the winter and spring, we go to K-6 programs, about 60 elementary school programs. And the goal there is to introduce Shakespeare to young people and teachers at a time where they would be most receptive to hearing and receiving performance and also Shakespeare. And so we're bringing two shows, one show in the fall, one show in winter, spring, into the schools. We perform for about, well, the fall is 80 minutes, the spring is 40 minutes. It's a great show that we always make sure is relevant to our young people and our teachers. They then have a talk back with the actors. And then most importantly, we have a really robust curriculum that we build with our education team. And the actors will teach the students for the remainder of the school day. Super impactful, really fun. I can kind of give it to Sam because Sam's been basically running our elementary school program.
And I wanted to throw that to him because, Sam, you mentioned it earlier how that's one of the funnest parts of your job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my favorite tour, to be quite honest, is the elementary tour. I've done six of them now. Similar to, you know, how the vehicle, Shakespeare being the vehicle for community in the summer, Shakespeare's the vehicle for new types of learning in a lot of these schools for a lot of students. Just being able to learn through play and learn through drama. You know, we're on our feet the whole time. We're playing games. We're interacting with the play that they just saw. We're recreating scenes. We're seeing how things could have gone differently. We're opening up these boxes of critical thinking, of just discovery and play, decision-making. It becomes a lot of fun, but the best is when you see the impact of a student that maybe hasn't had the most success in a traditional learning sense, and then getting to experience theater and just cracking open a whole new world for them, especially in a lot of these smaller towns and smaller schools where there is no theater program, there's no theater. I've had students ask me before the show, you know, what's a play? When we say we're going to do a play, and they'll say, what's a play? And I'm like, oh my gosh, this gets to be something completely new for you. And they don't know how these plays end, which is great. You know, you do Romeo and Juliet in a high school, and a lot of students don't know how that play ends. I'm jealous of that. I wish I could see a play like that.
I'm jealous of what you guys get to do, but I'm thankful that you're doing it for the communities in Montana. And communities, reach out, okay? It's shakespeareintheparks.org for all of this good stuff. Kevin Aslin and Sam Cheeseman. And again, check that schedule. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.